This morning, thank you so much that you are our God and that you have the ability to take us deeper. And Father, also that we can just surrender everything to you and know that you have everything in control. So I'm grateful for this morning that you're God. And Lord, I want to thank you for what you have for us. I know that each one of us here, we're different ages, we're on a different journey, but I know that you can speak to us right where we're at. And I pray you would do that through Mike. Thank you for the message you've given Mike. And I just pray for an anointing and empowerment, Father, as he shares it, that he could be a spokesperson for what's on your heart. So thank you for what you're going to do. We honor you. We bless you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you. So if you're wet, can you get wetter? That's what you just said, right?
Well, I'm talking about it.
Okay.
Good
point. I wasn't visualizing being in water and getting wet. I'm like, man, I can't get wetter if I'm wet already. Anyway, good morning. I'm excited to be here this morning. I have a story I want to share with you this morning, but before I go into that, has anybody ever read The Fish Wrapper? Ever heard of The Fish Wrapper? Do you read it every week or every month when they come out? It's actually pretty cool. I'm not sure. My mom gets them, and then they ended up at our house somehow. I'm not sure, but I think they got some cool stories. There was a story in there that I read this week that I was really thinking about, and it's a story of a lady back in the 1800s who had a little or a big homestead. She lived there by herself, and she had a hired man that was there for many, many years and helped her with her crops and everything. Time came, I'm not sure if he passed away or moved on or what happened, but she had to hire a new person. She had to hire someone else to take his place. And this was not a good process for her. One of the first applicants that came to her was a young lad, and before she even talked to him, she had written him off because his dad, all the years that she's known his dad, he never worked, he always lied, he stole. He just took from everybody. He didn't give to anybody. He was really just not there. And so immediately she said, well, that's his dad. That's his son. I don't want to hire him. He's going to follow his dad's footsteps. And time went on. She couldn't find anybody. Anyway, she ended up with a bunch of money when she sold some stuff. And she told one of her friends the one morning that I have this money that I hid in my house. I want to take it to the bank tomorrow morning. But I'm kind of freaked out tonight because what if somebody would come and rob me tonight? So she went to bed, and middle of the night, sure enough, she heard noises in her house. And so she went downstairs, opened the door, and here's somebody in her kitchen going through her cupboards. She yelled at him, grabbed the first thing she could find, which was a bottle of peppermint stuff, and she went, threw it at him as he's going out the door, hit him in his back, and he ran out the door. So life goes on, right? And next morning, she goes to the bank with the money. On the way home, she stops at a local store. And she was leaving the store. This young man came up and was walking past. And it was this boy that she said is no good because of his dad. She said, hey, I'll take you home. I'm going right past your house because he had some groceries and stuff. So he jumped into her wagon. And immediately, what do you think she smelled? Peppermint. And here he was in this carriage with her, stuck. I mean, what could you do, jump out? So she confronted him, and he admitted it right away. Yes, it was me. And she's like, why'd you do it? She said, well, I heard you tell your friend about the money, and I wanted to find that money. Why did you want to find the money? He said, all I want is for somebody to believe in me. My whole life here, nobody ever believes in me. Everybody always turns away from me when I walk toward them. Nobody ever trusts me. Nobody ever gives me something to do. And I know it's because of my dad. I know the choices that he made is why nobody trusts me. But I thought if I could steal your money, I can buy a ticket and go out west where nobody knows me, and I can start over again. And I can be who God made me to be. Well, make a long story short, she ended up hiring him, and he worked for her for many, many years, was her best worker. And over when that had happened, all her friends were like, this is the stupidest thing you're doing. I mean, look at his dad. He's never going to mount anything. Look at where his dad is. But she believed in him. And with time, they changed the community because of his approach. All it took is for somebody to believe in him. That's all it took. One person to believe in him. Change his life and generations past. There's a story of a young man in the Old Testament that I want to share with you this morning. His father was not doing the things of God. His father was following the nation he was part of, following his friends, his family, doing whatever they were doing, was not standing up. And it appears, according to the story, there's not much written about this, but it appears as if this son was following his dad's footsteps and doing the same thing. He was not perfect in the story, as we're going to find out. But there is something that he was doing. He was not just sitting around doing nothing. He was doing something. He was grinding wheat in a wine press, hiding from the Midianites. God called him to stand up and fight. Now, the situation they were in right then was not a good situation. The Midianites were coming after them and doing lots of stuff to them. And it ends up that most of his nation was hiding in caves and dens in the mountains because they were too scared to do anything. But this young man, his name was Gideon, as you probably know by now, he was at least doing something. He was putting himself in a position where he was trying to make better the situation they were in. So he was out grinding wheat because he was trying to get some food. They were out of food. They didn't have any food. He was trying to do something. It was not an easy journey, but in the end, his response when God called him was what changed the entire nation because of him. We're going to start in the story by starting in Joshua 21, verse 43. It says, so the Lord gave to Israel all the land of which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelt in it. The Lord gave them rest all around, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers, and not a man of all their enemies stood against them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. Not a word filled of any good thing which the Lord has spoken to the house of Israel, all came to pass. So we know the story of the Israelites coming out of Egypt. We know that whole story. And right now it says the promise was fulfilled. God gave to Israel all the land which he had sworn to give them. So as we keep on going through Joshua, we end up a couple chapters later where Joshua was getting old. And he called the elders, Israel, their elders, their heads, their judges, their officers. And he had what I would call a farewell speech to them. And some of the things that he told them, says, you've seen, this is in verse 3, you have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations because of you. For the Lord your God is he who has fought for you. He started off by bringing it right back to God, telling them, this is what God did for you. And he goes off and says a bunch of different stuff. And then later in verse 6, he says, therefore be very courageous to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, lest you turn aside from it to the right hand or the left. And lest you go among those nations, those who remain among you, you shall not make mention of the name of their gods, nor cause anyone to swear by them. You shall not serve them, nor bow down to them. You shall hold fast to the Lord your God, as you have done to this day. So he was giving his farewell speech. He had done what God had called him to be. They had driven out the people. They were in the promised land. They were doing everything in living in what God had promised them. Now he is telling them, keep on. Don't go back on it. Keep on. In verse 12, he says, if indeed you do go back and cling to the remnant of these nations, these that remain among you, and make marriages with them, and go in with them, and they to you, know for certain the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations from before you. So he told them what they were to do, but he gave them a warning that if they go back to where God had taken them out of, beware. They shall be snares and traps to you, and scourges on your side, and thorns in your eyes until you perish from this good land which the Lord your God has given you. So going into chapter 24 then, he gathered some more people around from Israel, and he gave them another speech. I'm not going to go into details, but it does end. One thing that's cool, one of the most popular verses that we have in our homes probably today is in verse 15. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I mean, that's a verse that I know we have it in our house on the wall. There's a plaque. Probably all of us have it on plaques or something in our house. Very, very popular verse. And after he had done, again, giving them, telling them what to do, the people answered, this is in verse 16, and said, "Far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods." They made it very plain. This, far be it from us. We will not do that. For this is the Lord God who brought us out and our fathers. And they go on and talk about it. And Joshua says in verse 19, "You cannot serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God." Here he was just trying to tell them that they're supposed to do that. Now he says, you cannot. But what he was doing is trying to get them riled up. And it worked. In verse 21, the people said to Joshua, "No, but we will serve the Lord." I'm sure by now they were like getting angry at him because he's flipping back and forth. But they're saying, "No, we will." And Joshua said, "You are witnesses." And so time goes on. We're going to go back into, we're on into Judges 1. At the very beginning, the chapter, they were still putting God first. Because it says in chapter 1, it said, "After the death of Joshua, it came to pass the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, 'Who shall be first to go up for us against Canaanites to fight against them?'" They were going back to God and saying, "What's our next step? What are we supposed to do?" Which is great, right? It's what they're supposed to do. And they did. They started fighting right away. After Joshua passed away, they kept on taking ground. They kept on fighting battles. As I read it in the first couple chapters here, they did 12 different battles. And every single battle that they went in, God gave them victory. Every single one of them. But going back in chapters, still in chapter 1, in verse 27, there's something that changes. That sets up the nation for 300 to 400 years of utter turbulence, might be the best word to say. Says in verse 27, however, and I'm not sure I'm going to say all these names right, but I'm going to do my best. Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Bethshean and its villages, or the inhabitants of Ibleam and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages. In verse 29, nor did Ephraim drive out all the Canaanites who dwell in Gezer. In verse 30, nor did Zebulun drive out the inhabitants of Kitron, or the inhabitants of Nahalol. Okay, I'm getting lost here. These words, I might be butchering them, but I don't know. And in verse 31, and you keep on going to the verses, and you see what God had told them to drive everybody out. That was his command to them. Drive everybody out. Don't let them stay there. Kill them. Drive them out. And they are changing what God had told them, and they're leaving some of them in. They're not driving them out. It's going to come back to bite them. Not very much longer. Going into in chapter 2, it goes back to the death of Joshua. Says, so the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord, which he had done for Israel. But after Joshua died, and after the elders died, and there was no one there who had a witness who was part of it, this is when they started to not drive out the people anymore. This is when they started to leave pockets of people in. And like I told you, it came back to bite them. It started a cycle of turning away from God. And then God says, children of Israel, this is in verse 11, did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord God of their fathers who had brought them out of Egypt and followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were all around them. They bowed to them and they provoked the Lord to anger. In verse 14, it says, the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. This started a cycle of numerous times of God's anger. In the Bible, it says anger was hot toward the Israelites. And then he would send people into them and take them captive and put them under them. And they would serve them and do all sorts of stuff. And then they would end up crying out in anguish because of what pressure they had to be under and everything else that was happening. And then he would have pity on them. That's actually the word they're using here. Have pity on them and would send them a judge. And that judge would help them rise up, and they would win back the people, that win back the territory, and everything would be good again for a time. 8 years, 4 years, 40 years, 20 years, all different times. About 12 different judges, I think, or it's eight, I forget. But this started a cycle. And then after they were in that good time for a while, they'd go back to worshiping the idols again, and God's anger would be hot toward them. It was a cycle until we end up to where the story of Gideon starts. And that starts in Chapter 6, if you're following after. So at this point, the Israelites were again worshiping idols. And God delivered them to the Midianites for 7 years. This is in chapter 6, verse 1. The Lord delivered them into the hand of the Midianites of Midian for 7 years. It says, because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made for themselves dens and caves, and the strongholds which are in the mountains. So it was whatever the Israelites had sown, Midianites would come up. People of the east would come up against them. They would camp around them. They'd destroy the produce of the earth, leave no substance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor donkey. They would even do more than just take their produce, take their crops. They'd bring all their camels, their sheep, their donkeys in, for the very intent of trampling over everything, so there's nothing left at all. Nothing left at all. This is for 7 years. This is where Gideon was living in. And so he was hiding in the wine press, thrashing wheat, trying to do something, trying to make some food, trying to do something, trying to help out the situation. A bad situation. I'm guessing most of the people were probably hiding in dens, probably hiding in the caves, way back in where it's dark, where nobody can find them, because that was the easiest thing to do. Not Gideon. He was doing something. He wasn't just sitting around. This is the people group who God had brought out of Egypt, through the Red Sea, through the wilderness, through everything. They knew these stories. These stories were passed down. What happened? Where was this disconnect? And that's the very thing that Gideon asked a little bit later when the angel of the Lord came to him in verse 11. Says the angel of the Lord came. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. He was recognizing right there that Gideon is not just sitting around doing nothing. He's a mighty man of valor. Gideon said, oh my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? Right away it's going back to why are we where we're at. Where are all the, his miracles which our fathers told us about? Did not the Lord bring us from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hand of the Midianites. And the Lord turned to him and said, go in this might of yours. Again, recognizing that he was doing something. And you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? So as the story goes on, Gideon wanted a sign. Now here was an angel right in front of him talking to him. But he wanted a sign. So he said, stay while I go prepare an offering. And he did that. So he went and prepared an offering. Where are we at here? I think my Bible flipped on me. There we go. It says, prepared an offering of a young goat and unleavened bread. The meat he put in a basket, he put the broth in a pot, and he brought them out to him under the terebinth tree, presented them. The angel of the Lord said to him, take the meat and the unleavened bread and lay them on this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. Then the angel of the Lord put out the end of the staff that was in his hand, touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and fire rose up out of the rock and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread. That's a miracle. Think about it. Have you ever seen fire come out of a rock when somebody touched a stick to it? I've never seen that. It's a miracle. He saw that happen right in front of him. Now Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord. And the Lord said to him, peace be to you. I'm guessing he was probably freaked out by now. I mean, think about it. If you're there, you bring an offering, and all of a sudden this angel puts his stick on the rock and fire comes out, I think I'd be freaked out. And I think he was too. I think he was freaked out and scared because the first thing the Lord said is, peace. Be with you and do not fear. You shall not die. I'm guessing at that point, he didn't know what's going to happen to him. So Gideon built an altar. It says on that same night, the Lord came to him. The Lord said to him, "said, take your father's young bull." I'm just going to paraphrase a lot of it for lack of time because I'm going to be here for 2 hours if I don't cut some stuff out. So, just to paraphrase it, God said, take your father's bull, go out, and cut down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the wooden image that is beside it, and build an altar. So Gideon took 10 of his servants. They went out in the middle of the night because he was kind of scared of his father's servants and the people of the city. So they went out at night. I mean, you think about it. Right now, the entire nation is worshiping idols. They're worshiping Baal. They're worshiping these objects that God just told him to go out and cut down. So he was scared. They went out in the middle of the night, and they did that. They cut them down. They destroyed them, and they built the altar, and they offered the burnt sacrifice. The next morning, people were really freaked out when they woke up, and these idols were no longer in front of them. After him experiencing all of that, God said, so Gideon said to God, if you will save Israel by my hand as you have said, look, I shall put a fleece of wool on this threshing floor. After he had seen a miracle, after the angel had appeared to him, sat down, conversed with him, the Lord spoke to him, had the food there with a stick. All of a sudden, fire came out. His calling was still to go save Israel, and he knew it, but he wanted more proof. I think his faith was pretty weak because he wanted more proof. So, actually, back to one thing I had wrote on here that I missed. Back to the altar of Baal and the wooden image that he was supposed to go and cut down. That all happened before he started fighting, before he started going and finishing the call that God had on him. And what's significant to me in this part is all the other times that the people were sorry for all the oppression they were under, asking God to forgive them. They never, anywhere in the Bible does it say that they tore down the altar, tore down the idols. They kept them there. They just tried to say, you know, we don't do that anymore. We're going to flip. We're going to do something different. We're going to serve you, God. But they kept them there. But this time, God gave Gideon the assignment to cut down the idols, cut them down, get them out, tear them down, tear them up, cut them up. And that's what he did. When he did that, I believe it released them to be able to actually fight, to actually be doing the battle that God called them to do in a greater way than what they did in the past. That's the examples that we have in the Old Testament of the physical battles, and that's the exact thing that I believe we experience now in the spiritual realm. So if we're going to go to battle, and there's idols in our lives, if we try to cover them up and say we can deal with them later, we're not going to be effective. When we recognize the idols, when we cut them down, we tear them down, we get rid of them, that's when God is able to take us and actually use us and be victors in his plan for the area that we're in, for what the time that we're in. So if you go back to Judges 1:27, you know, they did not drive out all their enemies. They kept some of their enemies in, and their enemies are the ones that brought in these idols. Because they did not take care of it back then, way back in Joshua's time, or right after he died, it's because they were still dealing with them now. They were still there. He told them, don't marry them, don't communicate with them, don't do anything with them. He said, if you do, that there are going to be thorns in your eyes and scourges, and he said lots of other things. And that's what's happening here. All these times that they're going through this, these idols, these Baals, idols, these demons were still there bringing torment to them. Now Gideon is saying, cut them out, we're going to get rid of them, and that's what he's doing. So in Ephesians 6:12, it says, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Gideon first had to tear down the idols, and then he could go do battle. Now, bringing it to us into the life that we are living right now, God does not usually stop us from pursuing what we want. He didn't stop the Israelites when they were pursuing the idol worship that they were doing. It was their choice. They reaped the repercussions of that, the repercussions of that. Same in our lives. We are not robots. God does not control us. We have a choice of what we pursue. If we have idols in our lives, I believe it opens up the whole realm of the spirit of darkness, to come in at us and torment us. They may not be able to control our total lives. I have seen people who have been totally controlled by demonic forces. We have the Spirit of God living inside of us. I don't believe that can happen to a Christian who's got the Spirit of God living inside of us. But I believe wholeheartedly, and I know it for a fact in my own life, there are areas, if I have idols in my life, it opens up the door for that area for Satan to torment me constantly. And he will continue to do that until I recognize the idol that is there, I cut it off, I deal with it, I get rid of it, and I close that door. It takes out the right for him to do that. We have that choice. God gives us that choice. Doesn't change our salvation. This is my perspective. Doesn't change our salvation. But we are not going to be victorious in that area of our life that we have an open door, an idol that has erected itself in our life. If we don't deal with that, they have access to control that part of us. And trust me, they torment us. At this point of the story, before they went out and won the battle, the Midianites were totally controlling, totally tormenting, to the point where the Israelites were hiding in dens and caves. They were living in constant fear, I believe. Because what's going to happen if they find me? So I have a question for you. Are you living in fear? Is it controlling your life? Is fear controlling your life? Are you hiding out from God? Now, how can you hide from God? We don't go into our caves. We don't have caves. We all live in our nice homes, right? Warm homes. We have heaters that heat. We have warm homes. We have beds. So we don't go into caves like they did, do they? Or do we? But I think there's other areas that we actually pretty much do the exact same thing that the Israelites were doing. And that is by hiding the gifts that God has given us. God has each one of us, has a plan for each one of us, has gifts he gave each one of us. We are the ones who are supposed to carry out his plan for our life in the gift that he has given us. Fear can so often, fear of man, fear of lots and lots of things, fear of man is a big one, can so often stop us from carrying out what God wants us to do. The gift that he has given us, to exercise the gift that God has given us. So we are scared, we have fear, so we hide it in a den. We hide it somewhere back in where it doesn't come out. Because we have fear. God says, break that off. Don't want that. Instead of having no faith, like Gideon did, he had to ask for all these signs. We're to walk in confidence in our relationship with God. I've heard this story many times about Gideon with the fleece, and oftentimes it's been shared that the fleece was a good thing. You should put a fleece out before God. I said, uh-uh. The only reason he had to put a fleece out is because he didn't have no faith, or very little. And he had to ask God, why was he doubting God? Twice. First, it had to be dry, then it had to be wet. Come on. If your relationship is with God the way it's supposed to be, there's no idols in between you. It's communication both ways. When God speaks, you know. You don't need to put a fleece out. You know. You might ask, what is an idol? You know, when we think of an idol, our first thought goes back to a physical 12-foot tall image of some kind that they bowed down. In the Old Testament, yes, that's what it was. They had them erected all over the place. They bowed down and worshiped them. But remember, the Old Testament, what was happening in the physical was shown out in the physical, right? Was that the spirit was shown out in the physical. But now we are in the New Testament. We're living Christ inside of us. We don't have those idols that are visible as much in our country here where we are. But it happens inside. It happens in the spirit realm. We can erect idols that we bow down to that might not appear like these 12-foot statues, but they're idols. Idols, if you look at Webster's, says, is the worship of idols or excessive devotion to or reverence for some person or thing. An idol is simply anything that replaces the one true God in our life. Could probably have a sermon on that all of an end by itself. So somebody wants to do it sometime, I would love to hear that. What it means in today's world to have idols, what that is. But for the sake of today and for the sake of time, I'm simply going to say anything that replaces the one true God. Satan's demons torment. They try to get us to condemn ourselves. They're constantly being a thorn in our side. Their goal is to direct our worship to anything but God. Might it be work? Might it be good works? Might it be a sports team? Might it be TV? Might it be, you name anything you want. Anything that directs us away from God is what Satan's demons are trying to do. And let me tell you, in today's society, that is happening everywhere, all the time, to a greater level than I've ever seen. I'm not that old. Their assignment is to steal, kill, and destroy. The awesome thing in this, we have a choice. We don't have to bow down to them. We don't have to. We have a choice. God gave us a choice. What do you choose? For Gideon, he had a really... I can't even talk this morning. He had already established himself with God as someone who's not just going to sit around and do nothing. He was out there hiding in the wine press, threshing wheat. When God spoke, he tried to talk God out of it. So God had a calling for him. He said, I want you to do this. And he tried to talk God out of it. He said, where are we at here? Yeah, verse 15 said, "Oh my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." He's trying to talk God out of it. While he was doing this, God is telling him he's a mighty warrior. He said, you're a mighty man of valor. you have this, go in this might of yours. He was recognizing that. He was trying to lift him up. And Gideon's saying, who am I? What can I do? I'm nobody. My family is nobody. My tribe I'm from, they're the least. I can't do this. Once he chose to believe that he does have a calling, because what the angel did, then he still tried to ask for a bunch of signs, which we already talked about that with the fleece. But God believed in him and was patient. And the end result, that Israel was victorious again and lived in peace for, I think it was 40 years. One man changed that nation. Started with one man. One man has someone who believed in him, and that was God. And you might say, God already knew the end result. I hear what you're saying, but I say this story is given as an example of how to believe in somebody and just keep on when you know somebody has a calling, to keep on pushing and not give up, to keep be patient with the person, to keep on being for them, keep on believing in them. That's what I believe this story is showing. When somebody tries to do a pity me, I can't do this. No, that's not who you are. God gave you the strength. You're in Christ. Christ in you. God didn't take no as an answer. I'm glad he didn't. Now, the lady in the story that I talked about in the beginning, she believed in that young man, even though all her friends laughed at her and told her it was stupid to hire him because of how his dad was. She didn't believe that. She believed in the young lad, and he made a big impact in her life and the community that he was in. My question to you this morning is, are you in a position that people can believe in you? Are you doing things that is getting you out of your comfort zone, out of hiding back wherever you could hide? The gifting and the calling that God has given you, are you walking in them? Are you living them out to the best of your ability? Or are you saying, I recognize God has a calling on me, but you know what? I'm too scared to do it because, I don't know, I'm not good enough. I can't speak. People aren't going to, like, this is radical. Like, yo, I'm just going to go with the flow. Is that you? Or are you saying, God, you have a calling on me. I recognize it. I know what it is. While I don't understand it, I'm going to do the best that I can with what I have. When you do that, I believe there are people God's going to send that's going to come in behind you, and they're going to believe in you, they're going to support you, they're going to empower you. Empower is right. You want to be empowered? Awesome. Are you sitting around saying there's no way to get out of this oppression we're under here in Lancaster City, county, state, nation? Or are you saying that God can and will do something? Are you cowards just sitting around doing nothing? Are you putting yourself in a position to make a difference in the people that you're around, in the community, wherever you're at? The next question is, who will you believe in? Who will you believe in? The very young man or young lady that you walk beside, or family, doesn't matter, that you walk beside, that you believe in, during everything that comes against you, that you believe in because you know God has a plan for them, could be the next Gideon for us. Could be the next preacher that goes across the world, the next evangelist, could be the next person that goes and frees people across the world. I have no idea. We don't know that now. But who will you believe in? Who will you take? God is working in you. God is in you. Who will you take under your wing and believe in and empower and teach and disciple and train from as little as 5 or 6 years up to whatever age? Who will that be? It starts, I believe, by us being in a position where God can even use us. To be in a position where God can use us. If we're hiding our gifts and we're hiding in the caves and dens, I think it's really difficult for God to use us. Can he? Absolutely, he's God. But I believe it's difficult. If we're hiding the gifts that he gave us, we're not walking out what we know. So I challenge us here as a church, as individuals, as families, here at Way of Jesus, to be in a position and be available if or when God gives you your next step. Whether it is somebody comes to you and says, I believe in you. This gift that I see in you is something God put in you. I want to come alongside of you. I want to empower you. Whether that's you or whether God gives you the vision to go to another person and believe in them and empower them. Either or. We need both. We need both. But I challenge you to be in a place where that can happen in your life. When we do that, when we are in that position, we could change church, the community, people that we're, it doesn't matter wherever we're at, people are going to change. Not because of us, because we're being obedient to where God has put us. We're being obedient to the calling God has given us. That's what would change people. Not programs, not events, not school, not church, but the people in it. When God gives us that and we walk it out and we're obedient in it, that's when change will happen. That's what I want to see. That's what I want to see. The Lord's Prayer, one part of it, says, may his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. That's what I want to leave with us this morning. May his kingdom come here on earth, here in Lancaster, here in wherever you live, wherever you work, wherever you go, whatever you're involved in, may his kingdom come here as it does in heaven. God bless you.